Hello, listeners. You are listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and excellentcultures.com. This is your host, Zach Gandra. And with me, as always, the inimitable, I can't even say it today, Steve.
I'm feeling inimitable today.
Inimitable Steve Gandra, and highly not mutable, as you'll remember from the last show.
Immutable.
Just couldn't stop him.
Immutable, not mutable, that means...
Not mutable.
That means you can't get me to shut up.
Yeah, I don't know if we can talk about it. We do have a workshop coming up July 21st and 22nd, Achieving Excellent Cultures Workshop, and we're doing that, here locally in Seattle, right, Steve?
It's in Seattle, Bellevue, Washington, beautiful downtown Bellevue.
Bellevue, Washington, we love doing those. And I don't know, can we talk about our working on accreditation for that? Should we talk about that or no?
Well, we're in the process of receiving final approval for accreditation credits on the workshop. It's actually been so well received by so many leaders that more HR professionals are wanting to come and receive accreditation because their bosses are really getting into the content and getting a lot out of it.
I'm really saddened by that our Culture Monster certificate of completions aren't enough.
One day we'll have a show and then we'll interview the Culture Monster on the show.
That should be interesting.
And our guest today definitely is not the Culture Monster.
Not the Culture Monster. We have an author with us, Steve. You want to introduce our guest?
Yeah, John Gaspari is a really cool guy. He's actually speaking to us from back close to Boston on the East Coast today.
Nice.
You know, thank God for technology, and John didn't have to travel all the way to Seattle to be on the show. But John has a really rich background that we'll get you to get him to tell you a little bit about shortly. Lots of experience, in the workplace as a scientific energy systems engineer, and worked for some really big companies like Honeywell, and a VP of his own consulting firm and another consulting firm, and worked for a lot of really, really cool firms.
Yeah.
But John also is an author. He's written one of the best books on the subject of engagement.
Perfect.
That I've seen.
Nice.
And, the cool thing you'll find out about John and his subject matter on engagement in the workplace is that folks are overdosing on engagement, and engagement is really not what
it
appears to be.
Isn't that the way we go? Pendulum to pendulum.
Yeah, so I'm not going to steal John's thunder. John, welcome to Biz Culture Matters.
Welcome to the show. Clap track. We're glad to have you.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So I'm dying to know. I'm sure you're a Red Sox fan.
I am.
Yeah. We're mostly Red Sox fans here in Seattle. But
we don't talk about football.
We hate the Patriots.
Well, good news tonight. It looks like the Red Sox are going to be rained out.
Oh no!
I think you should negotiate with the weatherman and have him move that rainstorm right over to our favorite quarterback who is vacationing there someplace with his deflated football.
All right. The ideal situation for me would be they keep Fenway Park forever and just put a roof over it. Like one of those movable ones like we have at Safeco, and then you'll be good. Just no rainouts.
That would be good. I think it's a terrible weather forecast. Very serious thunderstorms coming in.
Oh my gosh.
But we do love the Red Sox, so don't let them play in lightning.
Okay.
All right. Well, we're glad to have you, and Steve's got a boatload of questions ready to go here for you, don't you, Steve?
Yeah, a bunch. So, but John, why don't you just start out by sharing with our audience? I mean, you have such a cool, colorful history in corporate America and have written so many neat books. Why don't you start out by just kind of sharing with everybody a little bit on your background and the kind of work that you do and your feelings on the subject of employee engagement?
Okay, well, my background, going way, way back, my formal training was as an engineer. But as I tell clients, particularly of technology companies, that I used to be technical, but I got over it. So that was back in the 70s that I was an engineer. But since the mid-1980s, I worked as a consultant to help leaders achieve higher levels of engagement in their organizations. And virtually all of my work can be boiled down to one bit of counsel that I would give them, and I give it to them ad nauseum, which is that engagement is not a list of items that appears in the action steps columns of your project spreadsheet. Rather, it's the extent to which employees are emotionally invested in their work. And those are very different notions. And unless leaders understand that distinction, their efforts and engagement are not only going to fail, but they're liable to do damage. The way I sometimes put it to them is that it's more a matter of institutional soulcraft than it is project management, and that at least gets them to stop and think about it. So it isn't so much that, you know, what I would tell them, you don't engage people. Your job is to create an environment in which they are more likely to become engaged.
That's great.
So for the past 30 years I did that. I'm happy to say that as of about a year and a half ago, I am retired from the world of consulting, but I'm now keeping very busy writing and speaking and teaching on these topics. And as you mentioned, I had a new book came out in February called Otherwise Engaged, How Leaders Can Get a Firmer Grip on Employee Engagement and Other Key Intangibles. And pretty much what that book is about, it's prescriptive in the sense, it's a how-to book in the sense that it's trying to tell people how to not do the things that will cause disengagement. And that might seem like a negative way to come at it, but I think that there's an enormous amount of gain that can be made if people just stop doing the stuff that causes people to disengage. And so my book is a way to help leaders identify some of those pitfalls and see how they can avoid them. It's really kind of two books in one. Part of it is a more traditional book with more straightforward expository essays. And part of it is a story, and that in itself isn't all that unusual anymore. It used to be unusual. But the story in my book, I think, is kind of different in that it tells a story of a family, and the head of the family, it's a father, a mother, and two kids. The father is a management consultant, and he's also kind of a knucklehead, and he thinks it would be a good idea to apply.
Are those, by the way, are those two mutually exclusive? John?
Management consultant and knucklehead?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you're right. That Venn diagram might show a lot of overlap.
But, go ahead. I'm sorry. I just had to throw that in.
Yeah, that was a fair point. And so he's decided that it'd be a good idea to apply management consulting techniques with his family to build a more loving family. And so he runs family surveys. He runs focus groups. He makes his kids wear lanyards with their value statements around their necks. This is meant to be ridiculous. I hope it's seen as ridiculous.
Well, it kind of sounds like how I grew up, John. So, with my father in the room right now.
Maybe you never wore a lanyard.
Okay, minus
values.
The name tag.
You
minus,
never wore a lanyard with
minus
value
the name
statements
tag.
Around your
you're
neck.
Right, you're right.
But what I'm trying to do with this is to get a reader to laugh at it a little bit because it's ridiculous, but my hope is also they might feel a pang or two of recognition. Because as ridiculous as it might seem in that context, it may not be all that different from things that they've actually tried. So my hope is that it'd be kind of fun to read, but also be useful, that it points to a problem without being threatening to people. So that's the strategy behind the book, but the book is about how to avoid pitfalls to achieving employee engagement.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that really got my attention, John, when we first talked was, your conversation about how engagement was not about an engagement survey, that it was something much more significant and much more effective when you really understood what it was. Can you talk a little bit about that and kind of share with our audience what the difference between real engagement and engagement surveys is?
Yeah, I think a good way to look at it might be to consider it a thought experiment that I'll often use when I give talks on this or do seminars. If you think of two adjacent rooms in a conference center, and in one and so we can see what's going on in room A and what's going on in room B, and in room A you have a half a dozen round tables set up, and at each of these round tables, there's a half a dozen people with a seventh person standing next to the table with a flip chart and a marker. And the people at the tables are talking, and occasionally the person with the marker will write something up on the flip chart. Maybe if these are real sophisticated sessions, they'll have sticky notes that they can put on the sheet or even colored dots if these are really high-level sessions. That's what's going on in Room A, that what's typically thought of and called breakout sessions in Room A. In Room B, you've got the room set up auditorium style. There's people sitting in neat rows. At the front of the room is a speaker, and behind the speaker is a screen onto which PowerPoint slides are being projected. So that's what we're seeing going on in the two rooms. So I'll ask people, in which room are people more highly engaged? And inevitably, and virtually universally, people will say, Room A, they're more highly engaged. But every now and then, I'll see somebody who seems to be chewing on the possibility of a different answer, and I'll draw them out, and I say, you seem like you want to say something, and they'll say, well, doesn't it depend? Do we have enough information to know? And
exactly.
That's exactly the right answer. Because if in Room A, where the breakouts are, the people are talking about something that's important to the business, the connection to them as individuals is clear. They know that when they're done and they come out with the recommendations, which is usually the way these breakout sessions work, that the leadership team is going to listen to the recommendations, will truly listen, and that they know they're going to be given a fair hearing and that what they have to say will be genuinely considered, then, yeah, their engagement levels are going to be pretty high. And if in Room B the speaker is kind of a drone, the topic isn't that relevant to the audience, the speaker may even be reading off the slides, sure, the engagement level is going to be low. But flip that around now. Suppose in Room A, the topic isn't all that relevant to the people. There isn't any clear connection to them as individuals, plus which, based on past experience, they know that leadership is just going to pay lip service to this and they're not really going to be listened to. Maybe as the session is going on, someone is saying to someone else, yeah, didn't we just do this 6 months ago? And didn't leadership just blow off our recommendation? In that circumstance, the engagement levels are going to be low. Conversely, back in Room B, if the speaker is talking about an important topic to the business, it's relevant to them, and he's skillful enough to be able to hold people's attention over the course of 45 minutes or an hour, even while they're sitting in uncomfortable chairs, then they're going to be more highly engaged. And the lesson from that, I think, is that engagement is not what's going on inside of the room. Engagement is going on what's inside of the heads and the hearts of the people inhabiting those rooms.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
That's a fundamental difference. And again, about 90% of my work has been to try and help make sure people understand that.
That's a huge point. On that, we got to go to our first break, John. So we'll be right back with you after this commercial break. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and ExcellentCultures.com. We'll be right back.
Remember when your company was awesome? It was you against the world. Successful strategy, to-do list, done, supersonic growth. But over time, the sharp edge gets dull and good is good enough. Why? Because companies forget that bigger is not always better, that politics crush people, innovation and creativity. And before you can say rotten corporate culture, social media posts are infecting your business. The answer? It's not just your corporate strategies, it's your corporate culture. Excellent companies know that bad culture eats great strategies for breakfast. These guys really get it. Whether you're a family biz or a Fortune 500 or a new biz and want to get it right, excellent cultures can bring you back to awesome because they get it. What they know for sure? You don't need another consultant. Excellent cultures gives you what you need to get what you want. Bottom line business results that last. How do they do it? With successful business leaders as coaches and proven scientific data. They read your company's culture from inside out. Think MRI. They give you fast, accurate bottom line tactics. They don't treat symptoms, they go for the cure. Based on science, they reveal the hearts and minds of your people using proven and concise data, not warm and fuzzy psychobabble. And here's the kicker. You get supervisors who coach and inspire, workers who love their work, and everyone, that's everyone, not just the boss, takes ownership and accountability. It just doesn't get much better than this. And if you're wondering if Excellent Cultures works, just ask a few of their grads. Don't let the culture monster eat your strategy for breakfast. Check it out for some free advice from one of their experts now, or start it yourself with their complimentary online business culture MRI.
We're back with Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and ExcellentCultures.com. Hey, you are listening right now to some great stuff from author John Gaspari, and we're talking about employee engagement. John, remind us of that last point when we led out to the commercial break. You were just saying employee engagement isn't about what's going on in the business or in the room, but more so what?
Employee engagement isn't what's going on inside the room. It's what's going on inside the heads and hearts of the people inhabiting the room.
Beautiful.
It's not the line items on your to-do list. It's the effect that your actions have on people. And that's an important difference. And unless that distinction is kept clear in one's mind, it's very easy to go off the tracks when you're trying to achieve higher levels of engagement.
Absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, and you know, it's really interesting you'd say that, John, because what we find out time and time again with our clients at Excellent Cultures is that just because your scores are high on the engagement survey, that doesn't mean necessarily that your business is effective. I mean, you could have very high engagement and go out of business if it was engagement in the wrong thing. Talk to our listeners a little bit about, you know, is the engagement survey going to tell you whether you really have engagement or not? And if not, then what should they do about it?
Well, again, I think that surveys can be fine, but one needs to be careful, A, in how the surveys are designed, and B, in what kinds of inferences one draws from surveys. I don't really know how one asks directly whether someone is engaged. That, again, because we're asking to put a kind of a quantitative measure on something that's inherently qualitative. If the survey is the part and parcel of the engagement effort, right off the bat, we know that that's not going to yield the kind of results that we want. Frankly, one of the things that I wish organizations would do now is to stop trying to do engagement. That engagement is the result of other things having been done well. That if you do other things well, people are more likely to become engaged. If we try and engage people, that is liable to turn them off. One of the points I try to make is that one of the difficulties associated with engagement is that the word engagement is a very common word, and it's usually used to connote some kind of connection or interaction. So we'll say that gears in a transmission engage, and opposing armies on the battlefield will engage, or diplomats negotiating a treaty will engage in frank and fruitful talks, all those things. And again, that conjures up the images of people connecting or coming together, but you know, that's not the kind of the whole reason that businesses have gotten turned on to the notion of engagement is a number of surveys, the best known of which came from Gallup, which shows the very clear correlation between higher levels of engagement and improved business results. So people saw those and quite correctly said, "This is very interesting. We ought to do something about it." But the engagement that those surveys are talking about is closer to the definition that I used earlier, which is the extent to which people are emotionally invested in their jobs. What happens, though, is people say engagement's important. We need to do something about it. We need to engage our people. So they then turn to the kind of mechanical, instrumental things, such as we have to have breakout sessions. We have to have more skip-level meetings. We have to have more people CC'd on emails that go out. And so it's easy to fall into the trap of saying we have made those connections, ergo we have engaged our people. And again, engagement isn't what you do. Engagement is the extent to which people are more emotionally invested. And I know I sound like a broken record, but that really is at the heart of it. Yeah, one reasonable question is why is it so easy? Why do people tend to go down that other path? Well, think about it. One definition of engagement, if we say that engagement is the mechanical thing, to do those things is pretty straightforward, it's tangible, and it's easy. If we look at engagement as in the, what I think, more correct sense, the intangible sense, it is intangible, it's complex, and it's hard. So if you come to a fork in the road, and down one path it says tangible, straightforward, easy, down the other path it says intangible, complex, hard, which path do you think is going to be more heavily traveled? And yet, that's what we need to keep in front of people, to recognize that distinction. And again, I know I sound like a broken record, but I think that is really at the heart of it. And that's why we can, you know, the only reason any of this matters is because it will help business results.
Yeah.
That means having people become more invested in their jobs, and that means helping people understand how what they do on the job affects business results, not getting them engaged by showing them movies in the afternoon or, you know, just being good guys and gals, although that may be part of it. It's, no, this is for business reasons.
Yeah.
This is not a social club. This is a business that must ultimately tie off against business results, and that becomes the ultimate criterion against which you have to measure this.
Yeah, that's very, so very, very well said. So in essence, folks, if your engagement survey says that your workforce is disengaged, or if your engagement survey says that your workforce is engaged, according to John's definition, which is much more about productivity and effectiveness than it is about the term, quote, engagement, unquote, it may not really mean anything. So that being the case, John, talk to us a little bit about your view of a high performance culture, a culture of ethics, values, employee engagement, you know, where folks are engaged. You know, what should the culture look like?
Yeah, I like to try to keep things simple. That's probably because I'm only capable of processing simple thoughts. But I think it all ultimately comes down to respect, properly understood, and. To my way of thinking, respect properly understood means giving due consideration to the other. So let me break that down a bit, that the focus needs to be on the other person, not on oneself. That kind of self-absorption or even solipsism, I think, is kryptonite to employee engagement. So the focus needs to be on the other, and it's giving due consideration. And consideration doesn't mean politeness. By consideration, I mean, did you stop to consider? Did you stop to think about the effect of what you said or didn't say, or did or didn't do, what the effect would be on that other person? And the do is in there because, and this is not saying that you just need to spend your whole day prostrating yourself to make sure you're doing what other people would want you to do. Rather, it's to say you have judgments to make. What I do will affect others. Have I stopped to think about it? And have I thought about it sufficiently and appropriately, all things considered? And I know that, so judgment is called for. I think that having spent more than 40 years in the business world and the last 30 of those explicitly addressing issues of organizational effectiveness and dynamics and things like employee engagement, I've come to the conclusion that the vast majority of issues arise from a shortfall of respect. And again, respect in the sense that I've defined it, that if more people in organizations at the end of the business day could look themselves in the eye and consider the question, did I give due consideration to others today? If more people could answer yes, I think that would do more to affect ethics, values, and employee engagement than pretty much anything else I can think of. But sadly, though, I think the percentage of people who can honestly and genuinely answer yes to that at the end of a business day is low. And so my simple-minded view of the world is to say, okay, that's where you ought to be focusing.
Right.
I said earlier, I wish I wish organizations would stop trying to do engagement. I wish they'd stop trying to do engagement. I wish they'd stop trying to do empowerment. I wish instead they would recognize that we're all in this together. You know, when you throw an elbow, it's going to hurt somebody. And what I do is going to affect you one way or the other. If people are more attuned to that, more attentive to that, give more consideration to that. I've seen that make huge differences in organizations, and I think that's where the focus ought to be, that focus on infusing respect into the organization, and things like empowerment and engagement will come.
John, why is it you think it's not our natural bent to think that way? Do you think it's, you know, well, in America, we're, you know, our values are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, which kind of points to me and what I want and what I want to go for? Or do you think it's just a cultural thing? Or obviously, employee engagement is a global issue, so it's probably more of a human issue. But where do you think it comes from?
I don't think it's the people. I'm an optimist. I think people want to do well by others.
That's good.
So in the push and pull of complex organizational life, man, I got these 27 things to do today. I got time to do about 8 of them.
Mm.
I pretty much need to keep my head down and just go.
Yeah.
And it isn't that I'm saying I don't care about you, Zach, or I don't care about you, Steve. It's that I'm not even aware of you.
Wow.
Because
yeah.
I'm buried.
Right.
And I mean, that may be a bit over dramatized way
yeah.
of saying it, but I think that has a lot to do with it. Because in my experience, if you get people to stop and think, someone will do something in all good faith and all good conscience, and will have a deleterious effect elsewhere in the organization. If you can point it out to them many times, they'll have that flat forehead moment where they just say, "Geez, I didn't realize that. I'll try and do better next time."
Yeah, I think that's I think what you're saying is beautiful. I think it's a right, and I love how you're. It's funny because I thought about me and my wife. Like, as a husband, you get into your work or whatever it is you got going on, and it's not that you want to ignore her or want to make her feel bad or think ill about her. It's just you're so absorbed in what you got to get done that's what happens. I mean, and then you work it out and you apologize and you know, it's what it means to be a good husband and a good relationship, which is essentially relationship is what it all comes down to, what I think we agree with and what you're saying as well. We got to go into another break already. So we'll be right back with you, John. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and excellentcultures.com. We'll be right back with John Gaspari.
Remember when your company was awesome? It was you against the world. Successful strategy. To-do list, done. Supersonic growth. But over time, the sharp edge gets dull, and good is good enough. Why? Because companies forget that bigger is not always better. That politics crush people, innovation, and creativity. And before you can say, rotten corporate culture, social media posts are infecting your business. The answer? It's not just your corporate strategies, it's your corporate culture. Excellent companies know that bad culture eats great strategies for breakfast. These guys really get it. Whether you're a family biz or a Fortune 500 or a new biz and want to get it right, excellent cultures can bring you back to awesome because they get it. What they know for sure? You don't need another consultant. Excellent cultures gives you what you need to get what you want. Bottom line business results that last. How do they do it? With successful business leaders as coaches and proven scientific data. They read your company's culture from inside out. Think MRI. They give you fast, accurate, bottom-line tactics. They don't treat symptoms. They go for the cure. Based on science, they reveal the hearts and minds of your people using proven and concise data, not warm and fuzzy psychobabble. And here's the kicker. You get supervisors who coach and inspire, workers who love their work, and everyone, that's everyone, not just the boss, takes ownership and accountability. It just doesn't get much better than this. And if you're wondering if Excellent Cultures works, just ask a few of their grads. Don't let the culture monster eat your strategy for breakfast. Check it out for some free advice from one of their experts now, or start it yourself with their complimentary online business culture MRI.
Hi, you're back with Biz Culture Matters and ExcellentCultures.com on Clay 1180. We're talking to author and consultant John Gaspari.
Former consultant, now author and speaker. He said he was retired.
Okay.
I'm just throwing that out there.
Former consultant.
I'm messing with you.
Noted expert in the field of employee engagement.
There you go.
John Gaspari from back close to Boston for you local listeners. Before the break, we were talking about, John sharing his view on what employee engagement really is. And it kind of sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, John, but it's kind of like starting to sound like that if you want engagement, then the golden rule in corporate America is still the golden rule. Is that a good way to describe it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's a reason that those rules have lasted for centuries and millennia, or however long that rule has lasted.
Yeah, it's been a while.
It does come down to that.
Yeah, it's been a while. So, but why do we complicate things? I mean, if all we need to do is pay attention to the people that we're working with, whether we're a boss or not a boss, and treat them the way that we wish they would treat us, why do we need all these complex engagement surveys and spend all this money to find out what it is that we're supposed to find out when we get the engagement survey done?
Well, I'm not so sure we do need a lot of the things that we do. So, again, surveys, if they're well designed and done at the right times and ask the right questions, and if the right inferences are drawn from them, I think they're good and necessary things to do. But I think a lot of the other things that go with engagement efforts. Let me give you an example. This goes back 8 or 9 years ago. I was sitting in the office of Vice President of Human Resources for a large organization, a company that did about $5 billion a year. And she was a VP of HR, and she had been given the charge by her boss, the president, to pull together a full-day meeting for the top 120 leaders in the organization. So she handed me a draft of an agenda she had drawn up, and said, "Tell me what you think of this." And I looked at it, and for the most part, it all made sense. There were all the good and sensible things on there. There was the report of the just closed quarter's financial results, a report on what the next two or three quarters look like and what the key business issues would be over those quarters. There was a report on the latest employee opinion survey. But then I noticed in the 1 to 2:30 time slot, she had penciled into the agenda breakout sessions. So I simply said to her, what are these breakout sessions about? And she said, we haven't decided yet. We're having a hard time coming up with a good topic. So I asked, to me, it sounded like a sensible question, namely, well, then why are you doing them? And she looked at me like I had just fallen off a turnip truck. She said, we got to have breakout sessions. That's the engagement part of the day. And that, to me, kind of captured it, that here's a sophisticated, smart, talented lady who's really good at her job, and yet she just said, here's this 90 minutes of the day that's supposed to be the engagement portion. I just, shouldn't the whole day be engaging? And again, it's this. She immediately branched to this mechanical thing that she thought she needed to do, putting people sitting around tables with someone with flip charts. And then I said, well, think a little bit about this, that picture that those breakout sessions with the top 120 leaders in your organization. But your reason for doing them is not terribly well thought through. It's kind of ill-considered. What do you think is going to be running through their heads during that 90 minutes? I think it's going to be more things like, why are we doing this? Isn't there a better use of our time? And wouldn't that be disengaging for people?
Hmm.
So So back to, I just think that, I said earlier, I wish people would stop trying to do engagement and spend more time explicitly trying to infuse respect, properly understood, into the organization. I know I sound like a broken record, but...
It's a good broken record.
It's not, I think, I mean, in all, we've been doing the show, what, 2 years, Steve? I don't know. We've had 80-some shows.
Yeah.
And we've heard different reasonings and different ideas for employee engagement. But I don't think we've had a guest on the show yet that just dropped it down to respect. I mean, there's been others. We've hinted around it. We've talked about it. I think you're wording it just fine. Broken record or not, it needs to be heard, and we need to keep saying it.
Yeah.
Because that's
the part of the power of it.
Yeah.
I say to people that, respect is simple.
Yeah.
Not easy, but it's
not
simple.
Easy. Right.
There's a difference. Simple simply means it's not complicated.
Yeah.
So all you got to do is throughout the day, make sure you have given due consideration to how you're affecting others. That's simple, but it's very, very hard to do.
Absolutely.
Of course it is. I don't deny that. But at least in my mind, at least you're solving the right problem instead of this illusion of rigor. That's the phrase I like to use. Is you have the illusion of rigor when you can have these nice, neat-looking PERT charts and spreadsheets with hospital corners to say, look at what we're doing about engagement. Look at all those neat lines and cells on the spreadsheet. Maybe instead of doing that, you ought to spend some time getting to know who your people really are and what makes them tick. And to me, that's where people are less comfortable, so they find good ways to avoid it. And again, I don't think there are that many people who are cynical enough to go through the thought process, I don't like doing this, ergo I want to avoid it, ergo I will just branch to breakout sessions. I think it's more that it seems to make perfect sense that to have engagement, you need to have more connection, therefore let's put people together in a room. There's a logic to that. Unfortunately, I think there's some fatal flaws in that logic which cause some of the problems.
Interesting. So, John, let's say we've got an engaged culture, a culture where people are, respectful of each other and they're practicing the golden rule and they care about what's really going on instead of just going through a lot of motions or of workshops and engagement surveys and communication force-fed as opposed to, the simple things that if you just believe them and do them every day, make a big difference. What are some of the derailers? What are some of the things that you've seen that actually, cause great cultures to get derailed?
Well, I do think that what can, first off, it is hard, and it's simple but hard. So it's just hard to maintain discipline. So that's just, we'll stipulate that. That's always the case. But one of the derailers, I think, happens when organizations look to HR to do some things that ought to be at the very heart of their own job description. And again, that comes back to coming to grips with the people part of their responsibilities. I think HR's responsibility should be limited to things like minimizing or offloading the people-related administrative and regulatory load. Providing the tools and resources to make other people more effective at the people-related things, and serving as a coach or counselor as those leaders step up to those people-related challenges. But when it comes to doing the things that it takes to truly know who their people are, what makes them tick, what their hopes and aspirations are, how their skills, aptitudes, and energies can be channeled in service of the business goals. And I'll say that one again. Channeling people's skills and energies in service of the business goals. That's all on the leader. You can't offload that onto HR. And I think there's a similar kind of abdication at work, and I do think it's abdication, when it comes to the way too many leaders will look at their communications team. They'll say, well, communications is going to do the communicating. And the folks in comms are very good at what they do, and that's providing support and technical expertise when it comes to the mechanical, instrumental aspects of communications. But the responsibility for truly communicating, for truly connecting with people, that's the leaders and the leaders alone. And I think the tendency, again, we get busy and to say, well, engagement is HR's job, communications is comms' job. That's something that's easy to fall into, particularly when you think you've got this thing nailed, and it's easy to get a little sloppier around the discipline that's required. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Makes a lot of sense. Huge sense. Huge sense.
I'm cutting our time a little bit short, but I want us to have a big section in the last segment of our show to give a lot of kudos to the book. So let's take a quick break right now.
I think that's an excellent idea.
I figured you would.
Says the author.
I figured you would. We're going to take a quick break right now, and then we'll be right back with John Gaspari. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and excellentcultures.com.
Remember when your company was awesome? It was you against the world. Successful strategy, to-do list, done, supersonic growth. But over time, the sharp edge gets dull, and good is good enough. Why? Because companies forget that bigger is not always better, that politics crush people, innovation, and creativity. And before you can say, rotten corporate culture, social media posts are infecting your business. The answer? It's not just your corporate strategies, it's your corporate culture. Excellent companies know that bad culture eats great strategies for breakfast. These guys really get it. Whether you're a family biz or a Fortune 500 or a new biz and want to get it right, excellent cultures can bring you back to awesome because they get it. What they know for sure? You don't need another consultant. Excellent cultures gives you what you need to get what you want. Bottom line business results that last. How do they do it? With successful business leaders as coaches and proven scientific data. They read your company's culture from inside out. Think MRI. They give you fast, accurate bottom line tactics. They don't treat symptoms, they go for the cure. Based on science, they reveal the hearts and minds of your people using proven and concise data, not warm and fuzzy psychobabble. And here's the kicker. You get supervisors who coach and inspire, workers who love their work, and everyone, that's everyone, not just the boss, takes ownership and accountability. It just doesn't get much better than this. And if you're wondering if Excellent Cultures works, just ask a few of their grads. Don't let the culture monster eat your strategy for breakfast. Check it out for some free advice from one of their experts now, or start it yourself with their complimentary online business culture MRI.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and excellentcultures.com. If I haven't said it yet today on this show, I think I haven't, that you can send us any questions you may have at asktheexperts@excellentcultures.com. And we would also appreciate a rating from you on our podcast section, which is on Stitcher for you Android users and, of course, iOS, iTunes for you Apple users, which would be myself. I'm still trying to get Steve over to the Mac side of the force, but he's just not going there with me.
I have an iPhone.
Well, you have an iPhone.
And it talks to my PC.
Wonderful. Well, we're back with John Gaspari, author of Otherwise Engaged, How Leaders Can Get a Firmer Grip on Employee Engagement and Other Key Intangibles. I love the sidebar on the cover there, John. It says, if, that is, it were possible to get a grip on something that's intangible. That's a beautiful side note. And then I was noticing, too, just during the break, and I asked John about it, the foreword by Jim Kouzes, who co-authored a book called Leadership Challenge that was a textbook of mine in college. So that's pretty cool.
Yes, I was thrilled when Jim agreed to write the foreword. He's a very wise and knowledgeable man, and he's also just a really good guy and a really nice man.
Nice.
So that's nice to hear, too, when you hear one of the greats is also happens to be a very nice guy.
Absolutely. And the fact that Leadership Challenge is a book that I remember reading from him, and the fact that I'm 38 now, almost 40, and still remember a textbook from college. So That means the book that he's a good guy, definitely, to have read
well,
the forward for your
book.
Well, if
it made that much of an impact that many years ago, he must know what he's talking
well,
about.
Well, not only, yeah, and not only that, it's still on my bookshelf. Like, I walk past the Leadership Challenge book every single day when I'm at home, so it's crazy.
I'm looking across my office now, and I see it on my bookshelf. I'm not exaggerating this. I think the 7th or 8th edition is out now.
Yeah, it is. It is. I just looked it up on the internet during the break, and it's a totally different cover now than it was when I read it. But, okay, so for my wife's sake, she'll be upset if I don't ask you this, John. What inspired the butterflies on the cover? Is that just a designer thing, and you had nothing to do with it, or?
Well, there's a little thing in the book which shows two photographs. Side by side. One is a photograph of a butterfly that's been pinned and matted and framed, kind of the kind of thing you might see hanging on someone's wall. And the other one shows a photo of a butterfly alighted on a flower in a meadow. And I was trying to make the point that that when you're talking about the intangibles, you know, which of those two photos appear side by side in the book. I said, which one of these is a photo of a butterfly? And the answer, of course, is both. But then I asked the question, which photo does a better job of capturing this creature's inherent butterflyness? And what I call its gossamer essence. And it's the photo of the, you know, if what you want is something that gives you a good objective sense of the width and the height of the wingspan and the signature pattern on the wings, then the matted framed butterfly is probably a better one for your purposes. But if you want to give somebody a sense of this butterfly-ness, then the photo of the butterfly on the flower in the meadow is probably a better sense of it. And I was trying to get it in the book that's kind of the distinction you need to get at with the intangibles. You need to recognize that intangibles are, in fact, intangibles. In fact, that's what what you call sidebar on the cover is intended to get at. That I did it. The subtitle says how leaders can get a better grip on the intangibles, but then I wanted to give it a nod to the notion that you can't really get a grip on something that's intangible, and that's actually what I hope is substantive points made in the book. So that's. Yeah. And then I think the designer just grabbed that and put it as a design element on the cover.
And went for it. No, it's good. It's beautiful. I'm glad I asked. And it's kind of, too, it gives the idea, at least, I think, at least in my mind, but you explain it probably in a better way, but the idea of intangible means you're always moving towards it. You're always getting better at it. You've never mastered it, but it is a continued growth spurt, or cycle. If you will.
Right, and it is, by definition, it's something that, no, you can't touch it or taste it or feel it.
Yeah.
But that doesn't make it any less real. I tell a story in the introduction of the book about I was given a talk on the intangibles to probably the most tangible, rational, left-brain-dominant audience I ever had, and it was an audience of leaders of a technology company, but it was the security department of a technology company.
Right.
These are people not given to reflecting on gossamer essence of butterflies.
That's beautiful.
And so I decided that instead of talking about the intangibles, I'd try and give them an example of one and make them feel one. And so I told the story of what happened the night our oldest child was born, our son Mike, who's now 32. But I told the story of how my wife saying, I think it's time to go to the hospital, and gathering up of the go bags and getting in the car. And the hospital is just 3 or 4 miles from our house. But as we get in the car, it was very quiet, and naturally there's a lot of emotions running wild. And so I said to my wife, how about if I turn the radio on? She said, that'd be a good idea. I turned the radio on, and it just purely by happenstance, the song that was on was Billy Joel's Piano Man. So by the time we got to the hospital, Piano Man was just finishing.
Nice.
And my wife got in. They got her into a room. Fast forward, you know, X hours later, wife and baby are doing fine. And so I said to the group, to this day, 32 years later, whenever I hear the song Piano Man, I get a powerful emotional jolt.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot show it to you. I cannot prove it to you, but don't you dare tell me it's not real.
Oh, that's great. Mm-hmm.
And everybody in this room has the equivalent story they can tell, and you know that it's real, and yet it's something that just wells up inside of you. And what now, 45 minutes later, I said my thank yous and was walking off the stage, and people were applauding, such as it was. And a guy in the front row held up his iPhone, and it was cranked up, and he was playing Piano Man. And that was one of the most gratifying moments I had, because I thought, good, that really worked. And a quick postscript to that story, in fact, this is in the introduction of the book. I was really happy with the way the session had gone and subsequent feedback bore that out. But I finished my talk, and it happened after, when I was done, they had called a break. That was a break on the agenda. And down the aisle toward me came a director from the company's HR department. And she said to me, that was really good, but can I give you some constructive feedback? I said, sure. She said, you got to remember that not everybody in these audiences is a baby boomer like you and I are.
Mm.
There's different age cohorts in the room, so next time you tell the story, it might be better if instead of having it be a song by Billy Joel, make it a song by somebody like Katy Perry.
Interesting.
What I said was, that's very interesting. I will definitely give that some thought. What I wanted to say was,
you missed the point.
But Billy Joel is the song that was on the radio that night.
Right. Yeah. When my son was being born.
I just opened a vein and shared a very personal story that I'd never shared in public before, and besides which, Mike is older than Katy Perry.
There you go.
and so think about that. This is an HR person.
Yeah, she missed it.
Who completely misunderstood. And now, again, that could be due to insufficiency on my part as a presenter, but
right.
You should never be surprised at what direction another little
absolutely
sucker punches have to come from, because it's intangible. You know, I couldn't put a slide up and show a graph, and so it's the nature of the beast. So you got to be ready to deal with that, and got to be willing to deal with that.
Right. I think it's hilarious though that that's a huge point, because your point was, this was my emotional connection to this song that is intangible. My emotional connection to Piano Man by Billy Joel is a movie called The Ringer with Johnny Knoxville. And it's one of the songs the characters are playing on the piano for fun. Of course, I'm Generation X, but so I obviously know who Billy Joel is, but that's what I equate it to, as a comedy by a guy from an MTV show called Jackass.
Yeah.
it's a whole different...
I'm 65 years old, and I should probably be embarrassed to say that I know the movie. I know the movie The Ringer, and
yeah.
I liked it.
Yeah, it's a great movie. Yeah. I think it's hilarious. Steve,
yeah, I thought we were talking about employee engagement.
We are.
We get in trouble if we say what the premise of that movie was.
That's right.
You made the point though that emotional impact is
absolutely
where it's at.
Yeah.
And if you know, you could have all the engagement surveys you want, and have all the engagement conversations, and all the interactions, and all the discussions, and all the consultants and all the trainers and coaches, but if the emotional impact isn't there, then it's not there.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, it's just not there. Go ahead. You go ahead, John.
Yeah, in fact, those surveys and all of that stuff is useful, but to me, it's analogous to the framed, pinned, matted butterfly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That can give you useful information, but it's not the gossamer essence of the butterfly. And so unless you go to great pains to remember, it's not the gossamer essence of engagement.
That's right.
Everybody knows. I mean, if I say to people, think of a day on the job where you come to work that day and you're working on stuff that you know is necessary to the job. It's part of the job description. You know it's important that you do it, and you do it well, and you do it right. But you've done it 100 times, and it's pretty rote and repetitive and mechanical, and you do this for 8 or 9 hours. Question. how fast does the time go on that day? And the answer, of course, is slowly.
Mm-hmm.
And what's your energy level like at the end of the day? And the answer is it's low. Now, think of a day on the job when you're working on something that you're really excited about, that you know, it enables you to kind of flex some of your creative muscles that you might not have been able to flex over the last few months, and you know it could be important to the business. How fast does the time go on that day? It flies by. And what's your energy level like at the end of that day? It's high. And so the question, right. If you apply the laws of thermodynamics, how could that be? How could your energy level have gone up when you probably burned more ergs of energy that day because of your enthusiasm level? And the answer is it had to come from a source within, that something about that day struck a resonant frequency that caused that energy to be released. And that's the nature of engagement. And it's on day two you were engaged. On day one, right. You weren't engaged. And as I'm sitting here at my desk at home telling you that, I'm kind of waving my arms in front of me because you can't capture it, you can't touch it, but it's very, very real. It's
valuable and important.
It's real.
John, we're out of time, but I'm going to say this. Stay on the line, and we'll be right back with you as we sign off. Hey, everybody, you got it. You've been listening to John Gaspari. You can get his book at johngaspari.com or just search for Otherwise Engaged, How Leaders Can Get a Firmer Grip on Employee Engagement and Other Key Intangibles on Amazon. It's on Amazon as well, and I'm sure at your local bookstore, too. We are signing off. This is Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and ExcellentCultures.com. Send us an email, ask the experts at ExcellentCultures.com.
See you next week.